This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
What is considered to be inappropriate classroom instruction on sexual orientation or gender identity?
Despite pushback from Democrats, the Florida House approves the so-called Don't Say Gay bill. A new report shows millions of children across the country are in jeopardy of being uninsured.
We estimate today that 6.7 million children are at extremely high risk of becoming uninsured during this process. As big as this number is, we actually believe this is a conservative estimate.
We'll hear what that means for Florida, and we'll turn to Washington as Florida Senator Rick Scott unveils his 11-point plan to help flip the Senate. We've got all that, plus a pause to celebrate Margarita Day with Governor DeSantis.
Having a margarita is well and good, but it is not a cure for Bidenflation.
This is episode 193 of The Rotunda. I hope everyone enjoyed President's Day. We here at The Rotunda observed the holiday with a break in programming on Monday. But we are back and we are getting near the finish line of the 60-day legislative session. Later in the program, you'll hear my interview with Allison Yeager with the Florida Health Justice Project. She's here to talk about a newly released report from Georgetown University, which warns millions of children, many here in Florida, are at risk of losing health insurance when the official public health emergency for COVID-19 expires. Stay tuned. On Tuesday, House Republicans advanced a bill to forbid discussions of sexual orientation and gender identity in schools, rejecting criticisms that came from Democrats like Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith, who says the proposal demonizes people like him who are in the LGBTQ community.
What is considered to be inappropriate classroom instruction on sexual orientation or gender identity?
This isn't about targeting any specific type of gender or sexual orientation. What we're saying within the bill is that the instruction relating to those topics at those ages is a conversation that's best to be had at home and not should not be part of the instruction of the school.
Republican Representative Joe Harding sponsors House Bill 1557, which became known as the Don't Say Gay bill by opponents. It states classroom instructions by school personnel or third parties on sexual orientation or gender identity may not occur in kindergarten through grade 3, or in a manner that is not age-appropriate or developmentally appropriate for students in accordance with state standards. Democratic Representative Michelle Raynor Goolsbee, an openly queer black woman, wondered how the law would impact someone like her wife, who used to teach in school.
If she has a picture of me on her desk and a student inquires about who is that and she says that's my wife, A, is she allowed to say that is my wife?
Nowhere within our bill would we limit a person talking about their spouse, a teacher talking about their spouse. Nowhere within the bill would the example you're providing, would that be not allowed?
Other lawmakers argued the proposal is unnecessary. Here is Democratic Representative Robin Bartleman.
Most school districts, parents have to sign up for any kind of sexual education curriculum. That's already mandated. And then it's mandated that the sex ed curriculum has to be posted on the website for people to see. So why is there a need for this when people can simply opt out?
Part of the reason that some of this is specific is that there have been examples of school districts that have gone within policies or procedures that they have implemented where they have pushed the parent away and to the point of actually encouraging disengagement from the parent.
Earlier this month, DeSantis said it is inappropriate for teachers to discuss students' gender identities without parental involvement. President Joe Biden weighed in and called the proposal hateful. The measure still awaits a final vote from the full House. There was an extensive question and answer session on another controversial bill garnering national attention. It's House Bill 7, which bans teachings on critical race theory in schools, though the topic is not taught in K-12 schools. Democrats attempted to shift focus from the bill that critics say targets people of color and expand to other issues and races. Here is Democratic Representative Joe Geller asking questions of the sponsor, Republican Representative Brian Avila.
But there's a student in the class who's of German descent, and they feel embarrassed by what their countrymen or ancestors or whoever did. Is that a violation of this statute?
A student has nothing to do, you know, with a historical event that took place, whether it's 50 years ago, 80 years ago, 100 years ago, or more, right? That is vastly different. That is vastly different than the student themselves feeling responsible for their own actions.
The House plans to continue to debate and will vote on House Bill 7 on Thursday. This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes. Visit RotundaPodcast.com, follow us on social media at Rotunda Podcast, and yes, you can personally support this program. Visit RotundaPodcast.com to learn how, and thanks for your support. A new report shows Florida kids in the Children's Health Insurance Program could be at most risk of losing health coverage when the official public health emergency for COVID-19 expires. Researchers at the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families warn millions of children could lose coverage as soon as April, when states will have to recheck eligibility for everyone enrolled in Medicaid, including kids. The center's executive director, Joan Alker, says the decision to make CHIP a separate program from Medicaid and to require families to contribute to the cost increased the challenges to keeping kids enrolled.
For all of these reasons, we estimate today that 6.7 million children are at extremely high risk of becoming uninsured during this process. As big as this number is, we actually believe this is a conservative estimate.
The report says 2.9 million children could re-enroll in public health programs if they lose coverage, but about 3.8 million would have to find other insurance coverage or become uninsured. While kids in all states are at risk of losing coverage, the report lists Florida as one of the states at highest risk, along with Georgia and Texas. Allison Yeager with the Florida Health Justice Project says she hopes Florida leaders will jump ahead of the looming problem to ease the transition in Florida's CHIP program, known as Florida KidCare. About 5 million Floridians are enrolled in the state's Medicaid program, most with managed care plans. So let's dive in and talk about this issue with Allison Yeager.
As a condition of receiving additional federal Medicaid funds, state Medicaid programs have been required not to disenroll any Medicaid beneficiaries. In other words, while we're in a public health emergency, it makes a whole lot of sense to keep everyone on health coverage. And so now we're looking toward the summer and anticipating that the federal government will likely end the public health emergency. And so we are aware of the fact, keenly aware of the fact that that public health emergency, when it ends, is going to mean the termination of Medicaid and CHIP benefits for a whole lot of people. And in Florida, we call that Florida Kid Care.
So with that, how many are we anticipating that are going to be in jeopardy or disenrolled?
We don't have a number of how many will be disenrolled. What we do know is that right now in Florida, 61% of our more than 2.5 million children who are under the age of 19 currently have health insurance through Medicaid or Florida Kid Care. Now, certainly not all of those kids are going to lose coverage, far from it, fortunately. But we know that a significant portion of them will. And so we know that a large number of kids, as well as a large number of adults, are going to be impacted by this end of the public health emergency, which is why we really need all hands on deck to take all the steps possible to minimize the damage that's going to flow when the disenrollments start happening.
From your vantage point, what are some of those steps that the state should take?
So there are numerous steps that Florida can be taking now to be reducing disenrollments. So we know that workforce capacity has been a challenge throughout the last 2 years in every sector, and that's as true in government as anywhere else. So we should be boosting call center workforce capacity and workforce capacity among eligibility workers so that we know that we have as many frontline workers geared up and ready to go to handle the volume of inquiries, of administrative work that that's going to be coming down the pike. So that's one thing, is boosting workforce capacity. Another thing is improving the renewal rates for automatic renewals. And that's something where the state essentially takes a look to see, okay, if a child who's currently covered is no longer going to be eligible because of the current category that they're covered under, are they potentially eligible under another category for ongoing coverage? And if that's the case, then we shouldn't be disenrolling them. We should just be moving them to that other eligibility category. And that's something the state can and should be doing automatically. So that's another piece.
Thanks to Allison Yeager with the Florida Health Justice Project. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tremel Gomes. Republican Senator Rick Scott is shaking things up in Washington. Scott, who is also chairman of the Senate Republicans campaign operation, jumped ahead of his party leadership structure. Senator Mitch McConnell said he'd skip outlining an agenda for his party until after elections. But Scott pushed forward with his own 11-point plan. Of the many eye-catching parts, it calls for the completion of Donald Trump's border wall and naming it after the former president. Scott also wants to eliminate what he calls racial politics. His way of doing so is by eliminating the option of Americans to disclose their race, ethnicity, or skin color on government forms. Despite Scott's eagerness to set the agenda, he told reporters he still plans to vote for Senator Mitch McConnell to remain leader.
After the election, I'll be surprised if he doesn't continue to be the leader. I'm going to continue to do my job as representing my state and whoever the leader is. But right now, I can't imagine there will be a leader besides Mitch McConnell. We'll take the majority back in November. I think we're going to have a great November. Mitch McConnell will be the leader of the Senate at that time.
And you'll vote for him, Senator?
Absolutely.
Governor Ron DeSantis had a little fun on Tuesday, which was National Margarita Day. He sent out a video which showed himself watching President Biden's spokesperson on TV before he chimed in about the special day. Take a listen.
So my advice to everyone out there who's frustrated, sad, angry, pissed off, feel those emotions, go to a kickboxing class, have a margarita, do whatever you need to do this weekend, and then wake up on Monday morning, we gotta keep fighting.
Having a margarita is well and good, but it is not a cure for Bidenflation.
Here are some Florida-related Black history facts. Florida was part of the Deep South's cotton belt, but it was also home to sugar plantations, both large and small. The harsh conditions of enslavement on sugar plantations is widely acknowledged by historians as being even worse than those on the cotton fields. Newspapers from the era carried ads of slave owners looking to buy and sell humans, and often contained instructions on how to train child slaves. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Thanks to Allison Yeager with the Florida Health Justice Project. Be sure to join us again Friday for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tremel Gomes.